I have no idea what's going on. It's the news, according to me. Yeah, it is Wednesday morning, and there's nothing new under the sun. We have, what is it? It's 7:45 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, September 18th, Wednesday, 2024. It's still 2024. Is it just me, or is all of a sudden this year just seems to be slowing down a lot? I don't know. Seems like this has been a long year, even though it's flown by. It's weird. It's a weird thing that's going on here. I don't understand it. Time is a very interesting concept. We're living in eternity. Time is only relevant in terms of how the Earth rotates and falls around the sun and does all those things that it does. So we've come up with this thing called time. ...30% of our time is spent sleeping. It's when you break it down to like how much time we actually live, actually spend living, it's quite minuscule. If you break down how much time I spend drinking chai, it's probably more than I sleep. I don't know. It's I have my regular chai here. The good thing I have here is my backup cup. And my backup cup is one of those wonderful backup cups with homemade sweet tea. I just made a fresh batch yesterday. Sliced up an entire peach. Put that in there. In fact, I put a slice of peach in my cup this morning. Oh, yeah. That's good. That's good stuff there. It's right there. I'm going to take it with me. I'm going to work today. I have to... This is going to be probably a pretty short show, I would imagine. For one, it's trash day. I got to take trash to the dump today, so I have to do that. What is that? 9:26. There's an appointment on my calendar. All of a sudden, I'm supposed to do something with. I guess it's going to be an interesting couple of months. I'm thinking about taking the first 2 weeks of October off, so I will be home a lot. Well. Theoretically, we're going to probably do some camping and do some other traveling, but it's, you know, just not real big trips or anything, just kind of random, whenever, whatever. A lot of other things I got to get accomplished. I'll fix my pool, finish up. I am making some headway on my truck. I've got I bought a brand new 2004 Dodge Dakota back in 2003. I actually bought it at the end of 2003. I got a really good deal on it, paid cash for it at the time, and it subsequently then went and got a loan on it. But I paid that off pretty quick. It was kind of we were in the middle of switching houses. We had just moved from one house to another, and so we had this financing thing going on, this leverage, like a carryover loan or whatever we had. So we owned two houses there for a little while, and so I had to do all this creative financing stuff. And then we got the other house sold, and then in the meantime, we had all this cash in the bank, and I got a really good deal because I paid cash for this truck. This is back when that really mattered. Now, it still matters, folks. Paying cash for a car is, I will never have another car loan. Now, granted, I have five cars right now, but I have two, a truck, I have a truck, a Jeep, and three cars. I might have a fourth car here soon. One of the reasons is we drive a lot of miles. And it is imperative that one of the cars is down for maintenance, that we are able to get back and forth to work. So it's important that we have a spare. We have this one spare. I don't consider the truck and the Jeep a spare because my wife can't really drive the truck. She doesn't want to drive the truck. I don't blame her. It's a messy, stinky truck. And she has to drive an hour each way to work. It's just not, I don't know that that's a dependable vehicle for that. It only has 100,000 miles on it, but It's old. It's 20 years old. And it's all rusted out. It's not clean enough for her anyway. But she, we do have this other spare car. It's an 07 that is in really good shape. Has a couple hundred thousand miles, a little over, I think it's 240,000 miles or something. Runs great. I mean, I drive back and forth to Chicago occasionally. But the, we have these other two cars. The one that I normally drive is a 2012. I guess it's getting old too. It's 12 years old already. It's only got 308,000 miles on it, which I think is just getting warmed up. Her car has, car she normally drives has a little over 200,000 miles on it now too. So, you know, our cars have, you know, some serious mileage on them, but they're in good shape. They're good cars. And we have no loans on any of them. We pay cash for them, but that's the whole thing. That's the whole point. You walk up to a dealer. There's this deal I've got going on right now where I'm potentially going to make an offer on a car out in Philadelphia. And it is, because I'm probably going to sell the 07. Probably. They're actually going up in value right now, and I'm not sure if I want to sell it right away or not, because they're actually, I'm going to get more out of that car than I bought it for, than I paid for it, which just blows my mind. And I'm going to pay less for this other car than I paid for that car originally. Used, of course. The used car market, by the way, is getting very, very soft. And it's hitting some areas of the country more than others. But yeah, that's why I'm going out to Philly to look at this car. But I'm making them an offer. I would drop cash on the thing right now for the price. They have this best offer thing there. Now, a lot of these dealers on eBay, a lot of times what they do is they'll sell a car for a certain price, and they have this extra fee that they put on there for all the delivery charges and everything else. The crap that they put on there. It's usually about $500. And how it comes out exactly to $500 is just amazing to me how they just slap that $500 on there. So what I usually do is I say, I'm going to come look at the car. I'm bringing this much money in cash. I want you to know that if I drive the car off the lot, that's all you're getting. Taxes, license, you know, the temporary plate, taxes, all your fees, all have to work out to five, you know, whatever it is, $6,000-$7,000, whatever it is, whatever, 10, whatever it is. I'm bringing the cash, and that's all I'm bringing, and not a penny more. So if we can't make this deal happen for this amount of money, when I drive off the lot, then, sorry, I'm walking away. Now, there's not very many dealers out there that will see somebody walk in the door with that kind of cash, ready to plop it down, and watch it walk out the door over a measly $500. Most of them will say, oh, well, okay. They grunt and groan and cry and whine and whatever. They do all the stuff that they do. And then I walk out the door. Boo hoo for you. I don't know. Anyway, onward and upward. This is going to be a fairly short show. It's over now. I'm done now. Now, we have, I have to take another sip of this tea. It's just so good. Oh, it's just good stuff there. That's some good stuff. That peachy kind of, the aftertaste is kind of like this little peach aroma kind of that lingers. I don't know if any of you have been to Olive Garden lately. The Olive Garden used to have actually peach Bellini tea. Now they have this peach raspberry tea, which I think is just raspberry tea that they just claim. That they just put a little peach syrup or something. And I don't know what they put some kind of flavoring in it. It's just regular tea and they just put flavoring in it. So it's not any kind of, they used to have peaches in the glass. There was like two or three peaches, slices of peach in the glass a long time ago. All of a sudden that went away. Then the peach Bellini went away and it's just peach raspberry Bellini tea, which actually isn't Bellini tea because it's just the flavor. It's got the name of a flavoring. And it's not nearly as good. This tea is probably better than what they used to have. I just remembered that because I went to Olive Garden last night for supper. I'm going to take my leftovers with me today. So I have a couple things I want to talk about. There's a whole lot of stuff going on with this whole issue with the... And I went on this little rant yesterday, and if you want to listen to me rant about the left and how they've lost their minds and they need counseling, they have serious issues. There are mental disorders. These people have literal mental disorders. They have problems. They can't function objectively. In fact, Hillary Clinton came out with a stupid, weird speech the other day talking about some guy from somewhere. I didn't realize how much she hesitates in what she says. She's very good at it. I have not, that's why I haven't caught it before, I think. She can say ums and uhs and ahs as if they're supposed to be there, like as if it's normal speech. It is not. And she went through this whole thing about some guy who claims, she quoted some guy. She's written another memoir now. She's on a book tour again. Because, you know, it's political hype season and they have to get that out there so that they can sell it during this political hyperbolic time where she's doing all this stuff. And she comes out with this little speech. She's being interviewed by somebody. She says something about so-and-so made the statement or she's quoting somebody that were, so they're supposed to sound intelligent when somebody says something like that. And she goes on about it and she says something about this reporter who says something about being objective. Objective reporters. And the guy twists it around to say, and they need to focus on the object. Well, in this case, the object is Donald Trump. That's not what being an objective reporter means. He completely twists this whole thing around. Being objective means that you approach something from all sides. That your paradigm it can shift very fluidly. You have this ability to look at something from all sides and just report the entire story. You can look at Donald Trump and report his humanity, the things that you don't like about him, the things that, you know, people are controversial things, the things that are good, the things that are, you know, whatever it is that you're going to, things that people like, things that people don't like. You're able to just report on it and just let that be the way it is. That's being objective. Being subjective means that you have an intent. You have already a presupposed narrative that you're approaching the story with, and you're going to make a subject out of that. You're going to subjectify that whole thing based on the narrative and the lens that you want to focus through. The objective reporter, journalist, is very hard to find nowadays because they'll usually, you know, pin you up. They want to pigeonhole you and put you on one side or the other. Most reporters that you see who are anchors at a television station or at a network anchor desk are teleprompter readers. Ron Burgundy was actually very well done. Actually kind of exposed some things about what happens behind the scenes. Ron Burgundy was this anchor guy. He was in a movie who whatever was on the teleprompter, that's what he had to read. And of course, they'd throw weird stuff at him once in a while, and they'd throw weird stuff into the teleprompter, or they'd just turn the teleprompter off and he'd get stuck. But one of the things that he did one time, they put a question mark after his name. He said, "I'm Ron Burgundy?" So he had to say it like a question. And that's hilarious stuff because that's kind of they're just actors. Most of these people don't go out and get stories. They just read the teleprompter.
I'm here tonight with the news. That's me with the news. All the news that is the news, that's me. The news, according to me. That's what they do. They just sit there. They have this
Their hair is perfect. They have all the things that are, you know, their teeth are perfect. Everything's, you know, made for television. These people have never stepped out into the street and interviewed anybody on the street. This is where some YouTubers go wrong too. Now this, now I have to hand it to Steven Crowder. He actually continues to go out on the street and do stuff with the public, mostly arguing. A fellow by the name of, and I'm Mark Dice. I like Mark Dice. He's a little bit extreme in some places, but he's typically right in the stuff he says in terms of his, you know, his data, the data he collects, and all the stuff he some of the conclusions he draws are a little bit off sometimes, especially 9/11 stuff. There's some stuff that I've heard a lot of people. A lot of these 9/11 truther guys are, they just don't have all the stuff. They don't have all the facts. There's some issues there with that. But now, folks, a lot of this stuff comes from people who weren't even, they were just teenagers. They were just kids when 9/11 happened. I happened to be working in the industry of airlines. I was an airline pilot on 9/11. Now, were we bamboozled after the fact? Yes, absolutely. The government used it to crack down. The Patriot Act, TSA, all this other stuff, Homeland Security, all came into being because of 9/11. It's an opportunity for them to, you know, make government much bigger. So, needless to say, that you know, they didn't let that crisis go to waste, so to speak. So, what ends up happening, you know, people, the journalists that are out there that just don't go out on the street anymore. Mark Dice used to go out on the street. That's how he got famous. He was a guy that went out on the street and asked people questions and had all this funny little question stuff he would ask them, you know, who's the vice president? And of course, they couldn't answer. They had no idea. He'd show them a picture of the vice president. They had no idea who it was. Just, you know, just kind of prove that the people are so dumbed down anymore. They just don't, they have no clue. These people are voting. You know, that's what's scary about that. But anyway. But before I go any further down that rabbit hole, let's many of the pundits out there now, they're doubling down on this idea that Donald Trump's rhetoric is what's causing, you know, people to want to kill him. It's not the news media telling you that he's a threat to the nation. He's a threat to democracy. Existential threat to humanity. This guy's Hitler. He's literally Hitler. They've said that. He's literally Hitler. What do you think's going to happen here? Hitler is probably one of the most vilified people on the planet in modern history. And yet he didn't kill as many people as some of the others. He directly, you know, in terms of war, he killed a lot of people. And in terms of genocide, he killed a lot of people intentionally. However, Mao Zedong, Stalin, they killed people indirectly by doing, you know, putting people into situations where they knew it was going to happen. They knew what they were doing. They starved the farmers. They starved the workers. You know, millions and millions of people, all for the sake of the communal society, or as English would say, the communal. However they say it. They always say everything different. They don't know how to talk English right, people over in England. So, yeah. Anyway, I digress. So we have all this stuff going on. It's backfiring on them, by the way. People now, in the polls are showing very, very clearly, and in fact, I've in some conversations with some of my minority friends, they're saying that it's getting harder and harder to find anybody. Here's the problem. Most minorities can come out and say that they're voting for Trump, or that they like Trump, or that they're pro-Trump with impunity. Nobody knows what to do with it. They can't be vilified. Nobody knows what to do. They'll call them racist, but they're like, okay, well, I'm a black man and you're calling me racist. Okay, I don't understand that. Or they'll vilify them for saying, how can you know, you're an Uncle Tom, or whatever they call, whatever the kind of word they want to use to call them. By the way, this whole thing of free speech, we don't have free speech anymore. The N-word, for example, if I were to use that word right now in the context of just talking about the word, not calling someone that name, not saying that name is a good name or anything else, just using it in terms of just the context of the word, I have to use the letter, can't use the word. I could cuss up and down, swear up and down, and probably get more popular by doing so. But if you use that N-word as a white man, you are now, you're a racist because you used that word. Because you spoke that word came off your lips, and now you're a racist. It's like going to McDonald's makes you a cheeseburger, I guess. I don't know. This is the kind of stuff that, as a society, we don't realize the utility of those things. And we can't be objective anymore. We can't have open debate and free discourse, because it's just, you know, as soon as they go down this road of name calling. But the minorities that are out there, and this is where I'm going with this, is this, that they're finding that they come out, you know, vocally. They're much more vocal sometimes about who they're going to vote for. And what they're finding is that the more vocal they are, the more they're finding there's a whole lot more people. One person I talked to said he thinks it's greater than 25% now of, like, people who are motivated to vote. He said there's a lot of people out there who will say they'll vote for one person or another if they're asked, but they never go out to, they'd actually never vote. So the people who are actual voters and who are motivated within the minorities. This one guy was saying, he travels around a little bit, but he said in all of his circles that he's in, he said he's not finding anybody who really wants to vote for Kamala. They just don't feel like they're going to, will they actually go out and vote? If it's convenient, they will. That's where it's at. So the voter motivation on the left is not extremely high for Kamala Harris, the Harris-Waltz ticket. And that's what this election is going to boil down to, that. Now, the polls are now showing that Trump is ahead in the national popular vote now, in some polls. They could be outliers, but he's definitely, and it's still within the margin of error to some places. However, you have to realize that everybody knows this. In the last three elections, Trump has polled higher lower than his turnout. The last two elections, I should say. Trump might poll at 50%, and then he gets 55% of the vote or whatever. And James Carville actually made this point in a recent interview. He said, for Democrats, if they're up two, they're down one. And he said, that's just normal. The reason for that is because of the Electoral College. Most minorities live in very heavily populated cities, which is another reason for the Electoral College. You spread out the vote, and people who, you know, that way most of the country is not being run by highly populated areas. That's one of the reasons. So then we have all this other stuff for for Trump in particular is that the reason is people don't respond to polls very well when it comes to Trump. They just don't want to answer. Somebody asks you who you're voting for. If you're voting for Trump, I don't know, I'll tell you who I'm voting for. That's just typically what happens there. And what they'll say is, well, you're ashamed. No, I will be shamed. You will try to shame me if I tell you I'm going to voting for Trump. That's the problem. I will be ridiculed, called names. It will be, you know, I just don't need that in my life. I have my vote and I'm going to do what I want with it. And it's none of your business. I don't need to put up with your little childish poppycock. Because your head's going to pop off. You're going to disown me. You're going to unfriend me. Whatever you're going to do, fine, whatever. But I know how unhinged people become with that name. So just not going to tell you. Because you can't handle it. You can tell me all day long you're voting for Kamala because that somehow signals your virtue for the humanity and all this bull crap that you think it does. It does absolutely none of that, but that's what you think. It's not Trump. As long as it's not Trump. Kamala's a terrible vice president. Oh, she's terrible. Oh, no, Joe Biden's the best. He's the best. This is the best version of, he's cogent. All of a sudden, and Kamala sucks. But as soon as Joe steps aside, or is thrown aside, and I still, let's talk about this whole thing about Joe Biden in office. Is he going to remain in office? Is he going to be the one who's actually the president on January 19th? I don't think he is. Their last-ditch effort here, if all else fails, I think one of the things that's going to happen here in October, and we're rapidly approaching October, I think around mid-October, possibly the second full week of October. This is my prediction here based on. This is nothing spiritual. This is just based on my thought process of how I know they think. They will have Joe Biden resign at that time. Now it's possible also that they might have him resign after the election, especially if Trump wins. One of the issues they're going to run into, and I'm sure they're going to contest this, if Kamala is put in as president, let's say Joe, you know, resigns or whatever today, and Kamala's put in as president. This would be considered a term for her. She can only run one more time. So her election, if she were elected to be president in 2024, heaven help us, she would not be able to run in 2028. Now, they would try to. And I'm sure they would twist the Constitution around all over the place to make it. If that happened to Donald Trump, if Donald Trump would have been the VP and somebody resigned in front of him and he put, if that happened to a Republican, if that happened to a Republican, let's say it happened to J.D. Vance. Let's say that Donald Trump, he wins the election and by July of next year, he resigns. For whatever reason, has some kind of issue, he has to resign. Some medical thing, heaven forbid it happens, but just may he serve out a 14-year, just whatever. And he decides to resign. JD steps in. I guarantee you, they will only allow JD. And this could have happened, Joe Biden could have stepped out of office his first month. And that would have put Kamala in the White House for 11 years if they let her run two more times. So the reality of it is, she is serving a term. Doesn't matter how short your term is. She would only be able to run one more time. So this is with the conundrum. I don't know. Maybe they haven't even thought of that. But she wouldn't be able to run in 2028. They would. She probably would, and they wouldn't even. Nobody would even bring it up. And anybody who would be a conspiracy theorist. But that's Constitution, as I see it. That's you're serving a term. Gerald Ford, who stepped in after Nixon resigned, ran. Of course, Jimmy Carter, his brother. Jimmy Carter, of course, won the election. A lot of the reason that people didn't vote for Ford was because of the Nixon scandal and his fact that he pardoned Nixon, but also because the guy had never won an election. He'd never been elected into office for anything. Now, say what you will about Ford. He was an establishment Republican, but this is back when establishment wasn't quite as big of a deal, because there were actually limited powers in government. But he actually had economically, and there's some other things that he was doing around the world, I think that probably would have we would have had a much better country. There's no question we'd have been better off without having Jimmy Carter in there. Jimmy was just a mess. People talk about the energy crisis and the Iran hostages and all that stuff. The issue really was all the other things that were going on at the time. Jimmy Carter makes it sound like, oh, if the Iran would have released their hostages, I would have beat Reagan. No, he would not have. He would not have beat Reagan. There was a landslide, by the way. And what you have to realize, most of the people didn't think of Iran as being the issue. The economy was the issue. And people don't remember this. I remember it very well. We had sugar shortages. Price of candy bars went up twice. It affected me a lot as a kid. Especially since I had a little business going to school buying people candy. And we had meat shortages. We had peanut shortages, milk shortages. Farming industry was struggling like you'd never seen it struggle before to produce, because we had subsidies and price caps and all this other kind of land set aside. All the stuff that Carter did affected all that. People have forgotten that, apparently. The kind of shortages we had were ridiculous in this country. Never been seen before in this country. Well, I mean, since 1900s. I don't understand how people... I get it. People go on with their lives and they are not reminded of that kind of thing. They don't want to remember that kind of stuff. It's bad times. But that was the reason. And Carter to this day would tell you, all the Democrats would say, well, it was just because of the Iran thing. Because Iran kept the hostages, and that's why people voted for Reagan. No, that did not motivate people to vote for Reagan. Think about that. It's just on its face. That's stupid. So, here we are. Folks, like I said, it's going to be a short show. This is a short show. This is the length of a short show. It's actually longer than I anticipated it being. I've got to get kind of moving on here because I got stuff to do. Got to get out of the house here in about an hour. But I do appreciate all of you listening. It is quite therapeutic for me, especially to know that people are listening to my rants, my stories, all my stuff. So thank you once again to my listeners. I do appreciate you, and I appreciate the time you spend listening to this, even if it's just to put your headphones on at night and go to sleep. That's always just droning off to sleep is because I'm glad I can be useful for something. That's always helpful. Folks, I may or may not have a show tomorrow and Friday. I don't know what the next couple of days hold. We're going to try to get this one out this morning real quick, and hopefully there'll be a couple shows. Now, next Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and probably Thursday, there will be a show. So you have that to look forward to. There's hope. God bless. Have a great rest of your day.